From deep inside the Death Star, I'm Larry Larson.
And I'm Chad Beter.
And I'm Andrew Richards.
Welcome to Defrag Tools. We're wearing the same clothes as last week. And tell us about these yellow wristbands that you've got on here.
So I had a massive speech last week at an internal conference. It was me, Mark Rusinovich, Raymond Chen, and Amanda Silva. And we did a very techie talk. And the host for the day was Chris Jackson, the App Compact guy. Mm-hmm. And so as a... We thought we had to have some swag, so Chris organized these bands, and they actually say Debug Strong rather than than the alternative, and so all the attendees got one of them, so I thought I'd...
Are you doping while you debug?
What can I say? Debugging's a doping thing.
Caffeine.
Awesome. So what are we going to talk about today?
We're actually going to look at what's inside of some of these dump files that lets you see a bit of history about what happened before the bug check. One of the problems with the bug check is it's sudden, right? The disk doesn't get flushed out and stuff like that. And you go, well, what happens if there was things like an event log entry that told you exactly what's about to be bad?
Yeah.
Because some of these drivers say, that wasn't good, event log, I'm going down, and bug check the box. And so it doesn't get flushed out to disk. And there's a subsystem in Windows called ETW, Event Tracing for Windows, and as of... years ago, 2000 when it was invented, but as things have moved on, more and more subsystems use it as its centralized logging repository, and the event log is one of them. And so what happens is it goes into these memory buffers. They're all memory buffers just for different reasons. And it goes into the memory buffer, and then at some indeterminate time, it flushes out to disk, and so it turns into your event log file or stuff like that. So this memory's still unflushed a lot of the time, and there's actually a lot of them running, and as Windows has got higher and higher, particularly in Windows 8, there is a lot of these buffers running. And a lot of them are actually analysis buffers, so that we can do exactly what we're about to show now, is look back in time for the last 30 seconds and worked out what's been happening recently. And it's amazing the data rate. 5-6 megabytes of trace file will give you a massive amount of knowledge.
And how do you look at these files?
So this is where we've been talking about Windows Performance Toolkit. We've been downloading it multiple times, but we never got around to doing it. So we're going to use Windows Performance Toolkit to do that. So normally you'd use Windows Performance Toolkit by itself, and when we start doing that series, we'll go down the normal track. But I thought we'd do this advanced, really cool, deep dive, hardcore debugging episode today and get the goodies out. So.
What we like.
Yeah. Elite hacker.
Hardcore.
So let's do what we need to do and actually install this sucker. So we've hived off the SDK. I actually already did this last night. So I'm going to grab the 64-bit one and install it. It's. I think I mentioned this in the SDK episode that we have much more site installs. There's no dialogues anymore. Where it goes to is program files, kits, Windows Performance Toolkit. And there it is. And then you can copy that and put it into your USB drive repository. So even though it installed into program files x86, it actually is an x86 program capable of looking at 64-bit and x86 dumps. Hmm. So it's kind of a bit weird that way. So in here, there's lots of programs, and we'll get to them in a sec. So let's get some data first. So I think this dump's the one I want. Yep. So this is a clean Windows 7 boot. I haven't turned on process monitor or anything else that would cause ETW to run, and it's just going to be like in the default state. There's an extension. This is the extension we're learning today, WMI trace. And the command that you want is string DRP, string dump. I don't really know what it stands for, but what it will do is find all of the ETW loggers that are currently running. All these are circular logs, a lot of them are circular logs, so they record what they're doing, and then after a certain amount of time will start flushing each other. And the main one we want is the kernel one. So this is actually tracking everything that...
Excuse me.
Chad's dying here.
Yeah.
Do we need an edit point? You want to... You good? And then we can... That's the one we want to pull out. And so what we do, these have IDs on the front, you can see, two, blah, blah, blah. And what we want to do is save it out. So WMI trace, see if I can remember what the command is, save log. We want it in the OX hexadecimal notation. I don't believe you can just put two. I think you actually have to put it
really, so
it matches it. I think I've been stung by that. And I'm just going to put it out to my SSD. And the file extension is ETL. So it's event tracing for Windows, and this is the event tracing log file, ETL. And it's a log save.
Log save.
Always back to front. And what this is going to do is it's going to find those buffers, do all the magic that it has to do. It has to do a lot of reading of structures and stuff like that to make it make more sense. And it's going to dump this out to disk. And we can see here that it had two buffers. There was 15 people looking at that buffer and blah, blah, blah. And then so what we need to do is look at this guy. So the by installing a Windows Performance Toolkit added to the path WPA, and is this it?
Yep.
Yep. Oops. Let's have a look at this guy. So in this case, there's a coupler graph. So what I'm doing is expanding the category. So there's two to choose from. So I'm just going to drag it over to here and drag it over here. There is actually another program that comes with Windows Performance Toolkit, and it's actually where we get the name XPerf. If you run XPerf by itself, what it does is it goes, you didn't actually mean to do that. You actually meant to run XPerf view. Same thing, same idea. This is what you get in the Windows 7 SDK and what you'll see in a lot of screenshots on blogs. We can do the same thing as we just did and open the file in that too. Slightly different way of looking at things. On here, there's this thing called the chevron, and then you'll get a list of every
trace
provider. Is that word for it?
Sure.
Log.
Yeah.
Something. Yeah. You'll get a graph. You'll get a list of all of them on the left. Turn them all on, and then you can see everything. So in this point, we can see process lifetimes, when threads were started and stopped, and when images started and stopped. So in this case, the only thing in the ETL logging was information about modules. If we look at the new one, this is a new razzed up faster edition of it, much more asynchronous. Like if you load symbols in the other one, it's a synchronous operation and you sit there and just watch the hourglass or the donut of death for a long time. And so, configuration's one of those things. So we actually have done the configuration before, and I don't know if anybody remembers way back to episode one, but we talked about it. What this program needs is it needs to know how to get to your symbol path in the first place, but this is what this symcache thing is. The analysis that this tool does is much more simplistic than at the debugger level, right? It just needs to know absolute basic information. And what it does is it gets the PDB files and actually turns them into a .simcache file, much smaller, like, you know, we're talking about a 50th the size. But it has to download the PDB and then do a conversion. And it does take a little bit of while. We're talking, it's like 5 to 10 seconds each, isn't it? If you watch it grow.
To actually download the symbols off this.
Yeah, and make the simcache files. It is like dunk.
So
once you've done it once, your cache is full. But the very first time, it literally is hours.
It can take a while.
Yeah.
Once you got the cache populated, it's faster.
Definitely one of those things that you want to keep your cache hanging around. So actually, I don't know what's in my cache at the moment. Since I only ran it yesterday for practice, I'm not sure. No, it's actually empty. I haven't done any simple resolution yet. If we dumped out that file, actually I think I closed WPA by accident. So let's have a look about what's inside it.
Is that the one you...
Yeah, it is. So what you can see is the process lifetimes, and there's a little thing over here where you can get more detail, and you can see that within this span, DLL host came and went, right? So. And then while it's running, vetmemtest and all these other programs were running. So you get an idea of what's in the box and what's going on.
And how long a time frame was this one, in this circular context, Colonel Water?
This one lasted...
Oh, is it the bottom there? 3.6
seconds.
So you can see the last 3.66 seconds before the blue screen.
Yeah. So this one, unfortunately, isn't very good from a what's in the circular buffer, but the other ones are kind of interesting. So sometimes you get a lot, sometimes you don't, and I'll show you another example of a circular buffer in a sec. But what you can get is the event logs.
Right.
And so I always forget what the command is, so I'm going to have to look it up. Whoops. The command I want is event log dump. So instead of pushing it out to a file, you actually just watch it on screen. So let's dump out, the application event log. And so what you're seeing here is what's in the event log queue to go to disk, but it didn't make it. And I have no idea whether it's going to have data in it or not, but I think it does.
Because we only flush those actually out to disk periodically.
Yeah, it's much like we talked about power management last episode. We don't want to be banging on at the disk to wake it up and start this whole I/O channel of turning devices on just to go, here's 1K. All right, so we buffer things. And so, yes, you can see this flying out. So in the event viewer, you know how you have the XML view? It's like that. It's like... what you're seeing on the screen is equivalent of this view, the XML view. You're seeing this view of it, right? That's mm-hmm. what's coming out on the screen. And you can see here, so this machine is called Cubic Defrag, and you can see that there's, what was this task?
Load perf.
Yes, we load the performance counters. Performance counters for WLAN service were removed successfully. So you might see that in the dump file and go, all right, we were unloading these drivers and then we blue screened, right? Well, that might indicate that that's where you should start looking, right? So it's a good way of looking back in time when you've lost that timeliness. So there's all these other ones and we need to talk about those and what is possible and what's not possible. All these other ones are other divisions of Microsoft. So obviously the kernel team cares about this a bit. The audio team cares about this one. So let's dump this guy out and you'll see what I mean about the limitations. Where'd I go?
Did you put it on D?
Yeah. Did I?
Yeah.
Okay, that's a bit weird.
Did it? Oh, events. It's events logged zero. I don't know that there was anything.
Oh, it's empty.
It was empty.
Let's do UPM. So D. Oh. UBPM. What's UBPM?
I don't know.
I have no idea either.
That's also empty.
Let's try this one. F. I'm not going to change the file name this time. I'm going to be lazy. Duh. Empty. Yeah. Actually, I think the other one I've got is good. So let's go to this other dump file. Because I got all these other ones out of it. Actually, you can see what I mean. So I pulled the audio one out of this guy. So, you can probably talk to this more than I can, but ETW now is the foundation of how Microsoft tracks anything, performance, logic flow.
Right.
And I mean, you might be able to talk how ubiquitous it is now and how important.
Yeah, I mean, back in the day, I mean, in order for like any driver, for example, to output anything, we would do. You remember a couple of weeks ago we did the demo of the live debugger, and when I booted it up, you'd see like a couple of debug text, debug string text would come out from like the NVIDIA driver and things like that. And it used to be that was kind of the only mechanism for logging, especially for drivers, and it was very like. individually implemented by each driver, and you may not even know how to turn it on. And so there was a need to standardize that across both drivers and user mode.
Yeah, Explorer, it's an Explorer, all those things.
Yeah, exactly. And so they came up with this this ETW mechanism, which is just kind of it's really just this architecture that's built in that anybody that is writing in Windows can use for logging, and it's kind of a universal thing. So we've really made a push over the last decade or so to get everybody using ETW.
Yeah, and what you can see is on the screen, this is events that it comes up in the generic event graph. It just means we don't know how to render it. It says, well, there's an event at this time, and this is down to the, you can see down here on the bottom, it's down to the cycle, nanosecond, right?
Yeah.
These things happened, and every single event has a GUID, which is what you're seeing here. This is classic GUIDs, and there's TMF and what's the other one called? Well, there's two formats of the formatting, and so this is the old style one. And because we don't have the private symbol, and so when you do it yourself, you need to really make sure you keep your private symbols. The private symbol maps this GUID to a formatter, so you know, like how you have with your format strings in C sharp and C++, where you go blah 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 percentage one blah blah blah. This is that formatter. So there's raw data that's fed into that, and then when you read it out, you get a nice string. It's very analogous to the event log way of doing things. You use the MC files, the message compile files. That turns into an ID, and then as long as you have the DLL in your box to read the event viewer, then that knows how to look up the string mapping and make it look pretty. Same thing goes as here. The difference is instead of it's the DLL, it's now the PDB file, and it's the private PDB file. Right. So this stuff is always turned on for analytic reasons for Microsoft. And a tiny little circle of buffers. They're very small. They're a couple of megs at most. And then that when we get the telemetry back, we can say, well, what happened here? And we can decode these internally. So sometimes you can read them, sometimes you can't. And that's what they are. And so in this case, you can see these little this diamond here. There is an event logged at that exact time with that code, with that data. And so it's like in a log file being very, very granular. And in the audio one, it just happens to spit out all these classic ones. I know with the event log, you can actually get a little bit closer. Do I have the... Here's the app log. So... Once again, it's just going to give me generic events. But with this one, we get a little bit further. You actually get the name of the provider who made the event log. And actually, in some of the categories, you'll get certain names. So there's the firewall. It's very hard to see with not much resolution, but...
You can see the firewall
info. And you can see things that it will say, I can't remember, actually I know a better way of doing it. Just because of a resolution point of view, XPerfView, it's clunkier, but it uses a smaller font. So I'll just use that. And so in here we go summary table. And then here you can see a lot more of the data over here. This is one of those information overload things, but this is a wireless adapter doing something, and it was something to do with the firewall rule.
So we're not seeing the full message text here, but we're seeing the message ID and the parameters that are associated with it.
Yeah. And so you can pull out a lot of data, and you can see in this case, there's stuff here, and here for the event log. And this one we have, this one's good for about 12 seconds of event log loop. Obviously, once it's flushed to disk, it empties it, right? So that's why it's gone.
So that would have only been the event logs that had been in memory, waiting to be flushed to disk, and then we crashed, and we didn't get to flush them.
Yeah. So what you can do is, if you know that you have a box that you need to know more about, what I did on this one is I started a bit more ETW tracing. You can do it various ways. You can turn on Presses Explorer, Presses Monitor enable the kernel one a bit more. Network Monitor will start tracing. And you can use the WP Windows Performance Tool to turn it on. And the way you do that, new to the Windows 8 one, is it's Windows Recorder UI.
Yeah, WPA UI. Yeah.
So Windows Performance Recorder
user interface.
So this is the start stop one. I was playing with this last night, and I've already changed the options. And there's a thing called the disable paging executive. And it will say, hey, it's not running. Now, in Windows 8 and above, we actually enable it by default. But in Windows 7, you'll get a warning saying disable paging executive is not set. And it's kind of a cryptographic meaning, so maybe you can explain it for us.
Yeah, so the disable paging executive sets a flag that prevents us from paging out the necessary pages in memory to allow us to get the symbols for all the loaded modules. So for every module that's loaded in memory, there's a header and various things that we need to be able to pull out of either a dump file or a trace file in order to see the version number and everything that was loaded in memory. And so disable paging executive forces us to keep those in and not page them out to disk.
So it's an optimization thing. We normally want them out because that's wasting RAM, right?
Saves memory, yeah. I suppose, yeah. But it's also a fairly small amount of memory.
Yeah,
so
it's not that much. If you're stressed by the fact that you've got a couple more meg of sys files loaded in memory, you've got bigger problems than that. It's probably why you're having bug checks. so what you can do is this is great. I'll show you the old way of doing it, and you'll see the difference, and you'll shake your head and go, "Oh, that's just too hard." Where is it?
Oh, you can show XPerf.
I think I had a script here somewhere. Anyway, the script is like, I kid you not, like 500 characters long to do the exact same thing. And once you do it once, you save it in a CMD file because you do not want to type it again. I'll give you an idea of how bad it gets. We'll go into this in way more detail later, but we're talking about typing all that stuff on the screen into
There are blog posts and things out there on how to do this, and I always have to refer to them. And the first time I saw the new Windows 8, Windows Performance Toolkit, and I saw WPR UI, it was like angels, a GUI.
What's everything though? It's like doing it to memory, doing it to file, circular mode, not blah blah blah. It's just everything that you ever wanted in a UI.
Yeah.
Personified. So
this makes it 100 times easier.
And the thing I love about it is, and Chad and I both do these cases. It actually knows about the audio and video glitch providers, and so that will help you. And we do a lot of those type of cases. It shows you the exact time when video stuttered, but it may be at a point which visually you can't even see, but from a driver point of view, they know that they lost a partial frame or something, and you can look at around that and correlate it to, hey, was the CPU saturated? Was the blah, 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 blah. And you will never get a dump file at that point in time, right? You just won't be able to pick that one nanosecond correctly, and so it's fantastic to correlate back in time. So what you can do is, the main one is I turn these two on. Run start, put it in circular mode. We won't go into how you do it specifically. And then what will happen is, I think this is the right dump file.
So this is a dump file you
this is another one.
Created while after enabling that in the UI.
And this one turned up, the NT kernel logger. All right. I think I made it 256 megabytes from memory. Mm-hmm. So it was not small. And then I've saved it out to disk to save time. And this is it. And this is more, so I got 94 megabytes this guy.
A lot more data.
And you can see this guy's taking a little bit longer to load. Has to think a bit more about it. And so let's have a bit more of a look around. Actually, I'll show you an XPerf because it's a much faster way of seeing what you have available, and then it's better to analyze it in the other one. It's kind of weird that an old program with old antiquated issues actually is good just for a quick summary. So here's all the graphs, and then we've got a lot more to choose from this time. And actually, because of my playing around. Some of them are turned off. And what we can do is have a look and say, all right, so CPU-wise, the box was pretty busy. This is what I put under a huge amount of stress, remember? And you can have a look at, okay, for each CPU, so that's, you know, CPU, that's CPU 0, that's CPU 1. So CPU 1 didn't get scheduled much. CPU 1's a hyper-threaded core, so it makes sense that it keeps off a hyper-threaded core, because hyper-threaded cores are actually only about a 25% core. They're not a real core. Mm-hmm. And so you don't want to schedule to them, because they're not actually being very efficient. CPU frequency, this is one example of how we're talking about power management. You can see around the end here where I started turning the program on that does the absolute saturation, it chose to bring up the CPU frequency. So all these times where it dipped, I was saving half my battery life. So that's kind of cool. CPU idle states, and this is where we'll just do...
States.
This is the sleep stuff. Actually, I just did it the hard way. And so, actually, let's try a hyper-threaded core. That's a good example.
It's going to be mostly right? BNC3.
So, yeah, so maybe you can talk about the levels and kind of what they would do.
Yeah, so these are kind of defined by, you know, the CPU vendors, Intel and AMD, but the C0 state is fully powered on, and then C3 is full idle, I suppose. So,
off.
Yeah.
And what we can do, we can zoom into here and get a really accurate... This is all... to the nanosecond level accuracy. I could go to the nth degree in here.
So there's these intermediate states that are a little quicker to recover from.
Yeah, so it went from 2, then up to down to 0, up to 2, went down to 1. Yeah, yeah, we're still...
Do we actually have a C3 or is it just go to C2? It may just go to C2.
Yeah. So you get an idea of how saturated your box... First thing I do when I see a complaint about performance is I look at whether C states... are all C0 where everything is pegged, or whether one single CPU is pegged. And then if it's a single CPU pegged, I see if everything's been scheduled onto that one core. You maybe you can do in code and also just by user, you can say set affinity. So you can say, I only want to run on CPU 1. Right? And if you do that, it will never get scheduled onto the rest. Some programs do that for various reasons. It helps cache coherency. It also helps if they know they're going to run hot. It stops them saturating everybody else, stuff like that. So that's some more CPU graphs we saw. Storage graphs, you know, how much of the I/O. I was copying 30 gigabytes of the SSD to itself, so it's not surprising to see that the storage was close to saturation or at saturation. You can see the types of I/O, so, you know, red is... right, and blue is read, I think.
I think if you hit the thing, it'll show you. Yeah.
Yes. Got it right. No, red was read. I got back to front. Damn it. 50-50 chance I'm going to go wrong. Disk utilization, so I can say, you know, what's happening at normal priority or not. So background I.O. versus normal I.O. So it's prioritization. So some things like antivirus and stuff run at low priority so that our request for the disk will usurp it and continue on. Who's using it the most? You know, we can hover over this big spike here and see that some services.exe is using it the most at that point. Memory, nothing. Mm-hmm. Nothing in the log. There's been nothing. The graph is there, it's turned on, but there's no data in it, which probably means it was flushed just before this trace ended. Process lifetime, so you can see right here, not my fault. Started right here. You can see it. Because these diamonds are there, it actually will snap to the grid for you. And so you can see the lifetime is there, and you can do things like clone, so you can see it on every other graph. And then within a process, obviously, there's threads. So if we expand this guy out, you can see not my fault starting a thread here. Right? So it was after the start of the main program, so that thread of not my fault happened then. We can just know about when things start and stop. I might collapse that graph. It's a bit big. DPC usage. So we talked about how in the last episode how there's running and ready. Well, if DPCs come in, they usurp any threads activity. Threads all run at priority 1 or 0, or most of them run at 0. DPCs run at 2, and then interrupts are higher than that. Anything that has an interrupt level higher usurps and takes exclusive ownership of that number. Anything at a priority level shares at that level and excludes anybody below it. And so you can look at DPC. So what we can do is we can look at a tiny little period and say, hey, this little time here,
there's a lot of driver activity.
It won't. Now, I pulled this out of a dump file. You see how these functions are like this? Even if I load symbols, because I pulled it out of the dump file rather than saying stop in XPerf or in Windows Performance Analyzer, it hasn't written out the metadata required to do symbol resolution. So even if I load symbols for 4 hours here, I won't get the data. But if I did have it, then I would actually get the module name. So it might be NVIDIA.sys or modem.sys. and then you would actually get the function. And you actually would get the function name. So remember how we did the DIV OBJ module name 2 to get the dispatch exports table? Yeah. You would actually get the dispatch table here. So you can see the functions that came in from interrupt and turned into a DPC and then called one of these dispatch routines. And you can see how long they ran, how many there were. So, you know, 409 is the hottest one. The max of this guy was 117. The average was 57. So some of them ran a little bit longer, some of them ran a bit shorter.
Typically, you do not want DPCs running for very long, because when a DPC is running, that, like you said, it hogs that entire CPU, and we can't even schedule it out. So it's up to the driver to do what it needs to do fast and get out of the way.
Yeah. Image lifetimes is kind of like process lifetimes. It just says when the image is resident. So we map in images and unload them. Process lifetimes will show you, say, maybe you have two notepads like this, and it'll give you two graphs. Image lifetimes will say notepad.exe is loaded, not, and it's finally unloaded because the two people using it have started and finished. Mm-hmm. And then the last one that kind of links in with DPCs is interrupts. And this thing is running hot. This is a bad interrupt graph, I can tell you. You should not see. My rule of thumb is over 1%. You can push it to say 2% is okay. This thing is up at 3, 4, 5%. This guy is past the point of acceptance. So you'll notice that the duration of this thing is really short, 16.1, 16.4. This whole thing we're looking at is, actually, I'm zoomed in. We've lasted 30 seconds in this guy, so it's not too bad. But this is running really hot up here. That's terrible. And then hard faults is memory. It's when memory is paged in from the page file because it's private memory, or paged in from an image file because it's image backed, like the executable itself or some data file or a Word document or something like that.
So you're doing a big file copy here, which would be why you'd
pushing the crap out of it.
Seeing a lot of hard faults. Yeah.
And then generic events, and you can see there's actually one provider who is writing a lot of events.
Thread set
IO priority. So obviously this is the part of the scheduler that says, hey, for CPU4, I set the IO priority to this guy, blah, blah, blah. So even without the symbols, I can still get a little gist about what's going on. Mm-hmm. And what's the last one? Memory utilization. All right, so out of my 16 gig of RAM, I am using... on the free and zero list, sorry, there is 5-ish, 6-ish gigabytes free.
Yeah, you got that purple one down there.
And then that is standby, has whatever that number is. So it's amazing what you can find actually in the bowels of a dump file, right? Anybody who says that a dump file is innocuous and hasn't got high impact data in it is, fooling themselves.
And you got all these charts enabled just by turning on
CPU.
What was it like? Just CPU.
Oh, CPU and disk
in the WPR UI.
Yeah.
Right?
So and you get a lot of graphs. And so this is the same thing in here. Same way. Much more. If you have a really big monitor, this is a much better interface. It uses heat maps more. Turn on data. So I want to see everything to do with IO writes, and you'll see that it will. Kind of like highlight the graph up here and kind of make it a bit bold. It's hard, probably very hard to see in this, but the shading is very subtle, but it does help you understand what's going on. You can see how the blues cover the area where you can find those events, and there's events for those ones within that area, and so on. So that's a quick look at what ETW magic is inside those dump files and how you can look at, particularly event logs is one of the ones that you really should pay attention to. If the circular kernel logger is running, you can get the graphs we're seeing here. in Windows 8, we are logging more and more and more, and so you get more and more graphs. If you're finding that there's not enough graphs in there to make you happy leading up to an issue, run WPA, and we'll go in the great detail about that later, but run WPA, CPU, and if it's disk associated, you think, turn on disk as well, and you'll get, what was that, 10, 15, 20 graphs?
Quite a bit of information.
Yeah, and it's amazing what you can pull out. And you get this historical perspective on what's happening. So,
very nice.
Quite cool magic, I must say. We use this a lot. You say, someone says, I have this issue, and you look at the dump file and go, I really don't get how this actually matters, right? And what it was something happening a couple of seconds ago that started the decline into badness.
Nice.
So, it's a really good historical tool.
Awesome. That's the show for this week. If you want to email us, you can send an email to defragtools@microsoft.com, and we will see you next week.
Have a good week.